Now, concluding our program today, Movie Mole's Denise Morris and Jan Hocken talk about the new biopic film, I, Tonya, and its portrayal of the real-life drama of Oregonia Tonya Harding. They take up the gender and class politics of the film as it tells the story of Harding's rise and fall as a figure skater.
Good morning, this is Denise Morris. I'm with Jan Hocken to talk about I, Tonya, a film we both really to say we enjoyed it might be odd, but it is a very good film. We're going to probably argue in.
I think you unapologetically enjoyed it.
I really do. And I also have many film skeletons in my closet, guilty pleasures as well. Tonya Harding wanted to be judged on the fact that she could do things nobody else could, not her outfit or her manicure or the profound lack of hair technology that existed in the early 90s. Tonya had world-class talent and a world-class chip on her shoulder, but no matter how hard she tried to play the game, America wouldn't let her forget where she came from or how much she didn't fit into the mold. That is from Vivian Olin and Matt Harkins. They are curators of the Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan Museum in Brooklyn, New York. And it's from an article on Vulture called The Cult of Tonya Harding. And so if there could be a Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan Museum, there certainly can be a film that reads like a Christopher Guest mockumentary that's crossed with true crime and probably a bit of a splash of Martin Scorsese in there as well. And I'm sure folks can find other film references, but it's a unique film, and it's a unique approach to telling this story. And in my estimate, in my opinion, shall I say, I think that you can only tell this story in this particular way, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. I, Tonya is directed by Craig Gillespie and written by Stephen Rogers. It was released late last year in 2017, and it follows the life of figure skater Tonya Harding and her connection to the 1994 attack on Nancy Kerrigan. Australian actress Margot Robbie stars as Harding. She was also a producer on this film, and it has Sebastian Stan playing Harding's abusive husband, Jeff Galooly, and Allison Janney as Harding's controlling and also abusive mother, Lavonna Faye Golden. And the film begins in the 1970s in Portland, Oregon. And 4-year-old Tonya Harding is about to skate for the first time and becomes connected to her off-and-on lifelong coach, Diane Rawlinson. The film follows her into her adulthood and her trials and travails in skating, in competitions, and qualifying for the Olympics through the early 90s. So, Jan, certainly Tonya Harding in Portland, Oregon, and in Oregon in general, was their girl. Portland is a much different place now than it was then, which I found to be kind of humbling. But she was homegrown, and she was Portland's girl. So no matter what happened, she was their heroine, and she had such a great, strong appeal and support throughout her attempts to shake this controversy and to weather the storm of being pretty much a laughingstock and a spectacle in the media. And we wanted to kind of start there and talking about, you know, what was her appeal and how did she endure?
I think the film was overall extremely respectful in its treatment of Tonya Harding and her dilemma, and kind of lionized her, if anything, a bit much in that direction, but very respectful to someone, as you say, who did suffer a certain amount of ridicule as well as enormous fanship. But in addition to her being part of a kind of working class performance of femininity that's rougher and more aggressive than kind of a bourgeois notion of femininity, which figure skating embodies, and that has been really popular here in Oregon, including like with roller derby and a lot of sports, boxing, that I think has its roots more in working class culture, women's culture. But I think she was also a product of her time, and she not only grew up in Portland, but was a product of the 1980s and a period of post-activist women's movement. And in the 1980s, the women's movement was kind of suffering a lot of retreats. And we might see her as kind of carrying a lot of the fighting of that period that had really retreated in many ways on the political ground after the mass mobilization of women in the 1980s. She, as a character, raised questions about the place of aggression and competition, including competition with other women in women's strivings, themes that were really downplayed in 1970s feminism. So I think the role of aggression and violence in her life and how the film portrayed those themes is important to also take up and has been part of the controversy about the film.
Yeah, I think that's a point that we really want to address. I want to follow up with you on this notion of how her skating, as the quote I read early states, that she really wanted to do something that no one else was doing. And she knew she was doing that. And part of it was that she brought power to her skating and that the pressure for her to conform and to draw back was enormous. So the film goes into detail about her skating to ZZ Top. Then as she moves on and becomes more successful and is being groomed by her skating coach, you find her skating at the point where she reaches this beginning height. She skates to the Batman theme that moves into Send in the Clowns and then ends with Tone Loc, Wild Things.
She's kind of like a drag performer.
She brought everything about who she was sort of together in that moment. You know, the token Send in the Clowns would have been something more conventional that skaters were expected to do. And skating has been said to have changed enormously because of her presence, regardless of the controversy. She changed that sport.
It revived something and kind of burst out of the corset.
Right. And it wasn't just that she could do these jumps, but that she did them in a way with the power and the strength and the height of like just catapulting yourself in the air, spinning around and landing on a blade, you know?
So the spectacle of the athlete as a performer and entering into other areas of pop culture and kind mm-hmm. of the intertextual references that are part of pop culture. So she was on a frontier there as well.
And all of those things have their own codes of behavior and ethic and all of that. And I think that's partly why, as you're saying, Tonya Harding didn't want to be that person. And so there was probably a lot more animosity towards Nancy Kerrigan in the support of Tonya Harding because she represented something. And in fact, it's revealed, not in I, Tonya, but in other documentaries, that Nancy Kerrigan was not a princess. She was a working class girl.
But it's very much framed in class terms here.
Right.
And the working class girl makes good by overturning exactly. the more privileged girl. It's kind of like a lot of these high school movies have
sure.
some of that.
Because if you
thing.
Fit, you get support. But that's a point we could belabor, but we won't. So I do want to talk about the domestic violence piece. Jan, you've written a lot about it. In fact, your book, Hard Knocks, is the psychology of domestic violence and storytelling that was published in 2010. So you have, I'm sure, a lot of insights on the controversy around how that abuse was represented in the film.
I think it may be a sign of the strength and the development of the women's movement that the film was able to kind of play with these scenes where they weren't cast in a tragic way. I mean, the classic way domestic violence is represented in films is a woman's psyche is like worn down slowly. There's the buildup before the blow, and that's embodied in Lenore Walker's battered woman syndrome. And of course, in real life, these situations vary a lot, and there hasn't been much emphasis on the woman fighting back because that seems to compromise the claim, the grievance against men. Here, I think they tried to have it both ways. I mean, they did emphasize how she gave it back as much as she got from him, but it also seemed very arbitrary. Her husband just slugging her out of nowhere. He clearly did not have power over her. She was not diminished by his assaults. And I think that's what made it watchable, because part of what makes aggression against women so awful, it's not just the blow, it's the diminishing of the psychological and social space, the isolation that accompanies that blow. So you could say, well, she kind of burst out of how Hollywood conveys and how many of the stories in the battered women's movement frame that. But I can understand why that was confusing to people, how those scenes were portrayed, because they didn't conform to our usual scripts, but also I think were not very realistic in many ways and didn't, I think they were in some ways introduced to ennoble her rather than to try to understand something about the role of violence in her life.
Well, the director and writer both talk about this in the article in Vulture.com we can link to along with our post of this segment. You know, there's a lot of footage available. There's any number of documentaries out, and one of them recently is Truth and Lies, the Tonya Harding story. In that documentary, she answers the question, did you ever fight back? And she says, yes, but it doesn't work. So there's a more complex or a more thoughtful analysis from Tonya Harding herself in some of the documentaries, which we don't actually get. But part of that is the directors here say they saw her as accepting violence on a certain psychological way, integrating it into her life. Violence is all that I had ever known, is what she says, and is quoted as saying in the movie, and says that again in many documentaries. So it's a mess, I mean, in a way. In the film, it is the, you know, the truth and the lies and the wildly contradictory, they frame it to say, we don't know whose perspective is accurate here, but somehow we're going to try to piece those perspectives together.
And I think that's fine, but I think the cost of creating her as an admirable heroine was that she was always defeated, the victim of violence, and yet prevailed against it. In actuality, most people who are that successful and maintain that kind of ego strength have had people nurturing them. And the mother
right.
was seen as just pretty one-dimensionally mm-hmm. evil. I think there's a problem with that hyper-individualistic way of framing.
What about coaches? I mean, you didn't see the coaches
yeah,
as being
were,
playing a role in that?
They
I
were
thought
more
the film showed that.
Cheerleaders, but not, I don't think, in a very deep way.
Hmm.
So,
yeah.
No.
Well, that's for another time, I suppose. There's so much more to talk about. And this is Denise Morris and Jan Hocken. We have been talking about I, Tonya. We'll throw up some links along with our segment this morning, and we're going to pass it back off to our host, Tom Becker.